Brian, thank you very much for coming on today. What's up? How are you?
I'm doing all right, guys. How about yourself?
Excellent. Let me start with the manager, who is a good manager. You said that as well on the press conference. But I wonder, Joe Torre was here for 12 years. Joe Girardi was here for 10 years. Is there an expiration on the amount of time the same voice can be heard in the room? And was that a thought at all in the days after losing Game 4 to Toronto of moving on?
I mean, if I felt that there was a problem with his influence, connectivity, responding to him or him responding to things via them, then that's a different, conversation we could be having, but I don't feel that. So, I just think that winning is the goal, but it's not a given. It's something we're trying to obviously push through again. In his case, it would be the first time. I've won with Girardi and I've won with Torre. They were different teams, that they had. Some teams that they had were more than capable that didn't punch through that people thought were good enough, and others did. It's just not easy, as simple as that. But listen, if I felt that there was a disconnect between manager and players, then that'd be a different conversation.
Very important question I want to ask you, because I know callers say this all the time, but they're callers, and I may say this, or talk show hosts may say this, but it's different when it comes from legends. Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter implied and basically said that decisions in-game are coming from the front office and are not being made by Aaron Boone. Is that true, not true? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not true, clearly. Appreciate you asking so I can clarify. And they don't know. Clearly, they don't know. I know that DJ said that. I don't know what he meant by it. He did say he doesn't have inside knowledge when he said it, but he did say it for whatever reason. And I think that's the boogaboo that people get to throw out there when they got nothing else to throw. It's like, essentially he agrees with me that Aaron Boone's a good manager. This is Derek's commentary, and I agree with him. And then there's always the boogeyman of other people are making the calls. Analytics. People like to throw that too, and none of that's accurate. At the end of the day, you put Joe Torre on a deposition, you put Joe Girardi under a deposition, or you put Aaron Boone under a deposition. I've never picked a lineup. We've never picked a lineup. We don't tell them who to play. We don't tell them who to pitch, whether it's the pen or the rotation. We do have conversations like every organization, about what's best at times, in our opinion, their opinion. They'll ask us various different things, and that's about process and setups. But in the end of the day, they have the power of the lineup and in game, and even in game. To remind fans out there, it's not like the NFL where and TQ would know this. I don't, but I think the NFL, that these guys in the press box are connected, looking at offenses and defenses, and they're connected with their headphones to the field level coaches and getting feedback back and forth, et cetera. That doesn't happen in baseball. The dugout lines are all recorded by MLB and followed because of those cheating scandals, and monitored by MLB securities. And no one's calling the dugout. No one's making calls. If guys were making calls in front of players, they would talk to it and speak to it. And it just isn't the case. So it's just a sad, throwaway comments for people to make that don't really know.
Did you, I don't know your relationship currently with Alex or Derek, but did you call them, text them, and just clarify, or is it just something you don't feel the need to talk to them about?
I did call Derek right away. I was like, hey, man, well, out of curiosity, because, Derek, I think, would represent to you, because I'm a pretty strong, straight shooter with everybody I deal with. And so I was like, Derek, I'd never lie to you. I was like, do you think this? Do you believe this? And he said, no. If you watched, I said, I have no internal knowledge of this. I was like, I know, but you said what you said. And that's how it played. And he said, well, I feel Boone gets too much blame. So, he just, from his perspective, was trying to blend it without putting meaning to what he meant. And he didn't really tell me after that what he meant, but outside of pointing out that I did say I had no internal, information there. And so then I just said, well, for my edification, I'm going to just share that At no time have we ever done the lineups, and at no time has anybody dictated from any chair other than the manager's chair who to play. And you can lean on Girardi, you can lean on Mooney, you can lean on Torrey about all that stuff. And those are the facts. Those are the truth. I said, the only thing I care about, I said in the press conference today, is to have people in place that have good, strong processes, do the work, you know, are prepared, you know, playing different, you know, running through the different scenarios that could come at them in game when the, you know, because, you know, when the bullets are flying, they're flying fast and the reaction times are slow. So you need to be prepped for all that stuff. And you need to think through your lineups and what you're doing with them and where you're slotting guys and why and who to play this day versus that day. All the stuff you dissect on the radio and they do in social media and the fans love to get into. And, but, you know, manager's chair or the coach's chair, you know, they have access to a lot more information. And I actually, and this day will come at some point, I'm not saying I would go into the broadcasting side, but, you know, I have a different perspective where I see things playing out. And if it doesn't make sense, there's usually some other underlying information that's not public, whether it's in the NFL or the NBA or MLB or whatever. I'm like, you know, I'm speculating in my mind going, I bet you there's something here that they don't know,
right?
You know, that everybody else is going back and forth, managers covering, head coaches covering, or they don't want to give. There's various reasons, personal reasons, not to say, but again, I think that when a lot of times this stuff happens, it just plays out inaccurately. You get paid to have an opinion, but you don't have access to all the information. And sometimes you give a good opinion, and then sometimes you give a really lousy one. And in A-Rod's case, he didn't talk about, that I heard anything about manager decisions being made from the front office, because that's false. But he did say stuff about roster construction, which doesn't make any sense, because, I mean, first of all, they both picked us to win the World Series 48 hours before we got eliminated. You know, one, we're getting eliminated, you're at us eliminated by the Cubs, is my understanding, and then A-Rod by the Dodgers. And then 48 hours, that's the one thing about October, which I feel bad for managers and organizations alike, because, you know, it's so fleeting, the success and the, you know, it's like one day they're getting praised and supported and everybody believes in it and it looks great. And then the next day you lose and it's like, you're dumb and you're idiots and what were they doing? And so you get picked to win the World Series on Fox and then you get slaughtered, 48 hours later by Fox, by the same people that they played here. And, you know, A-Rod had a great career. He punched through with one championship and, you know, Derek has a lot more than that. And, you know, they're obviously respected people, but it doesn't mean their opinions are always correct every time they throw them.
Brian, Aaron Boone mentioned today he still did not believe the shoulder negatively impacted Anthony Volpe's play. And about 20 minutes later, you admitted that you did believe it affected his play. Is there a disconnect with Anthony Volpe between you and Aaron Boone?
No. I clarified that. I said I don't think Aaron Boone had an access to Dr. Chris Ahmad that I did. So I had a conversation with Chris about the surgery and the complications. It was more complicated than the MRI would have revealed. And I can't speak. I don't think Aaron had access to that information. So I choose, and it doesn't mean we both could be right. He could be like, hey, cause he was dealing with the player and, you know, on the ground floor here and the communications about how he's feeling and I'm three floors up and, you know, getting the information in the trainings reports and then my more recent information coming right from Dr. Mod post-surgery. And again, I can't speak if Aaron had that or not. So I choose to believe that, yeah, it did affect him. You know, it was more than we thought and it was more than, you know, and again, I think all things could be accurate. I think in season, we did not believe, I know we're accused of underplaying his injury, but it was based on, you know, his communication on how he was feeling every step of the way. And at times when he was struggling, I would even ask the question, you know, hey man, is your shoulder bothering you? And the trainer would tell me, like, I just talked to him this yesterday and he said he's never felt better. It's got no issues whatsoever. And his physical testing is coming back good and blah, blah, blah. And so you roll. The performance was, you know, certainly up and down and, you know, lesser than even he's, you know, would have been capable of, it in my opinion. And then after the season, if you asked me in June if we had a surgery coming, it wouldn't have been on the table. Now we did have a surgery and it was worse after you open him up on the non-throwing shoulder than what you still need for swinging a bat. And the worse than the MRIs reflect. So you treat the patient, then they treat, and then you treat the MRI, and then ultimately you still have issues, you open them up, and so I choose now to lean into. I think it definitely had to have an effect on this season, and I don't think there's a disconnect with me and Booney. I don't know if he actually had the access to Ahmad's information. I heard his presser before you, but in fairness, I didn't talk to Booney about what Ahmad talked to me about. There's only so much time in the day when we're doing all this heavy lifting, so that could be on me.
Now, when it comes to Volpe, and you mentioned asking him about the pain, we had a couple years ago the Anthony Rizzo concussion situation, and then this year, of course, lighter for a couple days with whatever was going on with his kneecap and the forearm with Clark Schmidt. Do you guys think you're putting a little too much trust in what the players are telling you pain tolerance-wise in terms of how these injuries are being handled?
No, I don't. I think that's the way it's done anywhere and everywhere, and we have an excellent medical team, and we are in the area of New York where we have the greatest access to the best doctors in the world. And so like anything else, medicine is a very difficult world. We're dealing with alpha dogs that are playing at the highest athletic level you can possibly play. And in many, if not most cases, their level of pain tolerance is off the chart. And so what I would feel, or you might feel, which could be radiating, it doesn't even impact him in any way, shape, or form. And even on physical testing, you know, that these athletic trainers get, they go to school, they get, accredited with, passing all these different classes and, move guys into certain, movements. And if it elicits these responses, there's weakness or problems of concern, depending on what area, and helps them pinpoint, their level of risk this is and what this might be. But if they're strong as bulls and they pass through that, and, obviously you do MRIs that don't necessarily reveal things, and off you go. But I remember years and years ago, we had a pitcher named Humberto Sanchez, and, he had elbow complaints. They kept repeating MRIs, Now, clearly the MRIs today are probably a lot more sophisticated than all the way back then. And he was a local kid from the Bronx. And finally, after rehab, failed rehabs, et cetera, numerous MRIs, everything done, you react, it's time to open them up. And then they open up, there's no ligament. He didn't have a ligament. It was blown out, and it was scar tissue that had revealed, looked like a ligament per MRI. And so sometimes you don't find out what you need to find out till the end result is, let's open them up and find out what we're dealing with, because everything else is not, it doesn't, something's wrong and you can't figure it out. So
what specifically was the surgery for Volpe, and what timeline are you looking at?
He had a labral repair on his non-throwing shoulder, and he will not, I think it's no swing for 4 months, if I remember right. I'm trying to, because we have obviously Rodon as well.
Right.
No swing for 4 months, and it's, really 6 months between that and Bacon and the rehab and all that stuff. So, he's not going to start the season on time. He'll be sometime in April, if not early May.
Will you look at the shortstop position during the offseason and be opportunistic on possibly bringing in an everyday shortstop, or do you look at that position as it's Volpe's when he's back in early May, late April?
We'll see. I mean, I still feel like, Volpe is our guy, and that, he's better. There's a better version of what you saw this past year, but at the same time, we'll go through our process regardless, and see what's available in the marketplace, for all aspects that, and we'll just compare it to what we have and go from there. But my default is, I think we have a shortstop. He just won't be our shortstop opening day. But I will definitely look at everything and anything. That's what we always do.
How would you label his first 3 years in the major leagues? Disappointment, below average, average? Like, you tell me, how would you label what you've gotten out of him 3 years into his career?
Some good times and then some difficult times. I talked about it in the press conference today, whether it's, kind of equating it to these NFL quarterbacks. Some are become busts and don't live up to it. Some, take more time. They're supposed to be the franchise, and then Baker Mayfield moves on, or Daniel Jones moves on, or or, you know, Zach Wilson moves on, or whomever.
Zach's not going to be good, Brian. Don't start with me about this. Well, Zach Wilson stinks. Come on now.
I'm throwing names out there. It doesn't mean they're accurate. But bottom line, he's a 24-year-old first-round pick that had a lot of success, a lot of belief is there. He is wired properly. He's not the city isn't too big for him. That's not part of reasons why he had struggles this year. I personally still think without, you know, going through our pro scouting assessments, getting all our coaches' feedback and everything else that we would normally do, I still believe that this player can positively impact us on a consistent basis as we move forward. But, you know, we'll still go through that. And it doesn't matter in theory what I think. I'm an open-minded individual. It matters what I'm going to be exposed to by a lot of people I respect. And it'll either reinforce my personal opinion at this point, or it'll have me pivot and decide something differently. But I believe, you know, he's worth believing in and worth, you know, walking through fire with, notwithstanding, obviously, you know, having a difficult 2025.
Luke Weaver implied during the Toronto series that there were, quote, internal factors for his struggles. What do you think those internal factors were, and are you interested in a return with Luke Weaver?
We haven't gone through our pro scouting stuff. Yeah, he's speaking to, I can't talk about, you know, what's moving forward since we haven't talked about it, but he was a great pitcher for us last year, more struggling this year, and what he was talking to is pitch tipping that, you know, was communicated with him throughout the entire year, and it just, you know, it's not easy. It's easy to identify stuff that other teams can pick up, and it's not necessarily as easy to get them fixed, even though you know what they are, and you partner with the player, and you try to walk through it, try to find different adjustments to, you know, eradicate it, and unfortunately that was not a successful venture, but that's what he was speaking to.
We're talking to Brian Cashman, general manager of the New York Yankees. Will you make a qualifying offer to Trent Grisham?
Not sure. Fair question. We'll walk through our process and see. I think usually those are around, I think the number is probably about $22 million. He had an amazing year for us, you know, gave us more than we ever could have expected. You know, we liked the player. We traded for him with Soto. And then obviously, despite not playing much in 24, we still tendered him a contract because we valued him and felt there was roles here for him. But the role he wound up playing in the end was so much more important and impact was so much greater than we would have bargained for. So bouquets go his way. He had a hell of a year, and timing was great for it too. He's a free agent, so you know that'll certainly be a decision we'll be forced to make sooner than later.
How do you decide? Because I know, just as a baseball fan, and no offense to Trent, because he had a great year, I look at him and say he's not that player. I mean, I look at the rest of his career. How do you make that decision on a guy who was one player his entire career, and then in a contract year plays like an all-star? How do you decide who's the real Trent Grisham?
Yeah, fair question. I know that we have targeted Trent for years because we thought there was more in the tank offensively. We thought he had power. We thought he had plate discipline. He was above average defender. So we had tried to acquire him for a number of years, then finally got him as packaged with that Soto deal. And because of our ballpark and, you know, the lift in his swing, we thought this place would be we could actually get some extra mileage out of the bat than he had already provided. But what took place this year, in fairness to anybody having those type of evaluations, nobody had that coming. It was an avalanche of good stuff. So, yeah, those are the tough things you got to wrestle with. You know, was this past year more indicative of what he is moving forward? You know, Trent, you know, has been a guy with a great reputation in the game and then had a chance to run things out in this particular arena, you know, and maybe he's unlocked some things. It looked different this year. Right out of the gate, I remember Booney, kind of saying some degree he was his pick to click this year. It was like he liked what he was seeing with the ball off the bat in the spring, and that carried for the next 6 months. And unfortunately, it didn't carry in October. But again, real great appreciations, you know, for him and a lot of the guys that, you know, produced in such a significant way to have us navigate out of, you know, 24, and you know, we lost a lot in free agency and trying to remake ourselves and find a different way, and a lot of guys allowed that to happen, whether it was imports or guys from within and stepping up, and he was certainly one of them.
We're talking to Brian Cashman. Do you, and a lot was made during the Toronto series about this, because they never struck out. Do you believe that you guys strike out too much? Is that something you would want to focus on and think that's kind of a formula to postseason success to cut down on swing and misses?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something. Like, for instance, you know, I thought we redid, you know, our offense, you know, when we lost the big man in Juan Soto to free agency. You know, that's a lot of offense that was coming out of our lineup, you know, and so how are we going to replace that? And so like essentially a third of our lineup was new this year. We import Bellinger, we import, you know, right below our noses, Trent Grisham kind of fills in. Then you have the combination of Goldschmidt and Ben Rice. That's three guys out of the nine. And then eventually in the second half, we acquire Ryan McMahon. So it certainly try to get more athletic, more explosive on the base pass, and, you know, give us a lot of different other weapons to deploy, not, you know, to make us in theory better. And so anyway, when the dust settles, like, you know, I think the back of the lineup, I didn't expect maybe, you know, Volpe to have the years at the back of the lineup that the year that he had, or Wells, you know, I think the year he had, you know, was a second, you know, his sophomore season. And so those things kind of became more volatile at the back of the lineup than, I certainly didn't game plan on that. So yes, I think strikeouts are a problem. We always try to eradicate them, but at the end of the day, that's what we wound up with. It was still the best version of what, we felt we could deploy, and we'll continue to try to be better at it.
Are you open, maybe not this year or next year or whenever, over the course of this Judge contract, to consider moving him to first base?
I mean, I think we're always open to do what we think is best. We signed Goldschmidt to be our first baseman, right? And then by the end of it, he was only facing left-handers, you know, and Rice took his job. Because Rice emerged. So, you know, I think that we're always open to do what, you know, what is in our best interest for the team. And, so obviously that's not a subject matter that needs to be in play today. But, you know, it's a long contract, and at some point, you know, it might be a different conversation.
That injury doesn't make you think about it? Just I know it. He's not going to need surgery, thank God. But did that give any thought of, hey, you know, plays first base, there's certainly a lot less throws. Is that a thought at all?
Not based on all the information we've been provided. He should be healed up. This shouldn't be a prerequisite to reoccurring again. It won't mean it doesn't happen, but he's not more susceptible moving forward once this flexor tendon was healed, that it's now all of a sudden not something hanging by a thread. It's not something that he is at a higher risk because he just went through this. Right now that's not a consideration.
You could be honest with me. Was there any joy in seeing Juan Soto miss the playoffs this season?
No, because, you know, I've been around long enough to know that you start playing those, I wish this somewhere else negative, and that those wins usually will blow back on top of you as well. So, I hadn't had a chance outside of when we went head-to-head with the Mets. They had a good team. You know, I know they got a good manager because he worked here. They got a good owner. They got a good general manager. They got a lot of good stuff going on. And sometimes baseball, I mean, it's more a reflection of how difficult baseball really is. No matter how good you are, it's just the 162 is, man, it's long, and it could be rather difficult. You got to stay healthy. I thought, you know, I know from afar watching, they had that one kid, had two guys go down with injuries out of the rotation that I thought was really a problem. The kid they brought in from Anaheim,
Griffin Canning, yeah.
And then McGill.
Yep.
Once those hit, then the dominoes. I mean, you remember what happened with, you know, Phil, and I remember what happened with us.
Yep.
And we went into a swoon this summer bad. You know, first we started taking on the water with our bullpen going down. Now guys that were being asked to step up in higher leverage roles, and they weren't necessarily able to do it. And, you know, maybe that coincided when Devin was struggling out of the pen on top of it. And then maybe the offense, we were starting to deal with some issues all at the same time. You know, whatever. Well, you know, we lose Warren to, you know, to an injury. Next you know, we're taking on water. Doesn't matter how on paper good we look. And it's just how can you survive stuff when it comes. You know, Booney talks about it all the time, like, hey, adversity's coming after us and we need to be prepared for it. But when it hits, man, you're going against other, you know, you're in prize fights every series. I mean, the postseason's a short series, but 162 games in season is a bunch of series that you run up against another prize fighter that you got to be in the ring and you got to find a way and to get through it and stuff. But I thought those injuries that hit really started a domino in effect and because they had a good thing going early, but you can get derailed and it could be, you know. One injury, one play, and next year your whole narrative starts to change, and that's why baseball is such a beautiful sport, but it's also such a difficult sport.
No doubt. Brian, we appreciate it, man. Thank you for making time for us.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you, man. Brian Cashman, general manager of the New York Yankees, who has to run, otherwise we'd go over the entire roster for an hour and a half.